me.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner reminding you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org, MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So we all saw, or some of us saw, read about, and followed what happened in the Golden Globes. Now the Oscar nominations have been announced. One of the commentators that I read about the, I think it was in Huffington Post or Salon, said that this will be the whitest Oscar since 1995. Well, that says a lot, but there's a lot more to be said about all of that. We're joined once again in studio by Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of American Studies at UMBC, co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair Body Politics in Africana Communities, and Kalima Young, Director of the Baltimore Art Plus Justice Project, a project of the Office of Community Engagement at MICA, and also is teaching a course on women in film.
Women and gender in film.
Women and gender in film. Yep. Welcome. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So your thoughts, folks. Join us here, 410-319-8888. Log on to our Facebook pages, tweet me at Mark Steiner. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. But let us know what you think about the Oscars, all the films you've seen. It's not just going to just be about race and film, because it's about any film that has affected you during this course of a year watching and what you see by that. We can see who has been nominated. Some of those films I think really deserved it. Some did not. But 410-319-8888 is the number. Please join us with your ideas, and we'd like to hear what you've seen and what you think. So where do we begin this? Let me just begin by saying that Ava DuVernay, mm-hmm. who is the director of Selma.
Mm-hmm.
And she had directed a film before that, which I did not know and just discovered this morning, just seeing the trailer and hearing about it. And I could see from that she was middle of nowhere, it's called. It's about a woman who is torn between two men, one who's doing time inside prison mm-hmm. and one who is a bus driver. And it seems like, from what I've read about it, an extremely powerful film, again written from this woman's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And she did things in that film, Selma, I think only a woman could do. And we could talk a bit about that. But your thoughts on this woman? I've came out of nowhere for most people as this incredible filmmaker. We're all looking at each other. Go ahead, Kimberly. Dr. Moffitt.
I actually appreciate her voice and am happy that she's at the table, taking a stance and telling stories through her lens,
mm-hmm.
because it's not a lens or a set of eyes that we often get to see films through. And even when we do, they tend to be relegated to certain spaces that only Black people are supposed to see or may have access to or have interest in. And she's created for us a film that is historical in nature, which might tap a number of audiences, but it's also a story in which she's giving us an opportunity to hear another perspective that we may not have heard before.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate, I feel like she is exists in a long line of female writers, producers, directors who are African-American who have been making work in Hollywood since 1912.
But have not been heard. Yeah.
Or whose stories or perspectives have been relegated to the sidelines. So she is following in the footsteps of many different women, and I really appreciate what she's bringing to the table right now. There's always one of us that crops up every decade.
Oof. Well, let's talk a bit about that. She was not nominated for Best Director. She was for Golden Globes, but she was not for the Oscars,
mm-hmm.
Which I think to many people is pretty glaring. Omission. And if you've seen the film, I would like to know what you think at 410-319-8888. I do think it is one of the best films of the year. I think that Birdman is probably one of the best films of the year. There are a number of films, I think, that are in that category. The Theory of Everything, I think, was an incredible movie.
Everyone's
as well.
Everyone's talking about Boyhood.
Boyhood was wonderful.
I haven't seen
it. But we'll talk about that in a minute, too.
I haven't seen that, but I wanted
it was an amazing
to.
Film, but I'll just throw this out as a sidebar since you raised it. I thought it was a tad long, but it was done over 12 years. I think the reason it's up there has more to do with the fact that it is a groundbreaking project shot over 12 years with the same actors building a story. I don't think it's the best film of the year, but I think it's a groundbreaking film.
Okay.
Right. You know, that's –
Yeah, for process.
Right. And the acting was wonderful, too. A lot of the acting was just superb. I mean, so, yeah.
Yeah.
For process. But what I wanted to throw out here about Selma was that in the – she's gotten a lot of flack over her portrayal of Lyndon Baines Johnson as President Johnson, right? And it's one of three films, The Imitation Game – and The Theory of Everything, The Imitation Game, which I have not seen, but I really do want to see, which is about the guy in Britain who broke the Nazi code and helped win the war, World War II. But at any rate, both those films were historical films that changed history, as filmmakers do.
They always do.
To make their story kind of flow differently and make it more interesting or to push a certain aspect of a film, you know.
Right. That's Hollywood.
That's Hollywood. But she has been condemned, excoriated. Yeah. For what she did with LBJ.
Yeah, and I find it very interesting because there are so many films, historically speaking, that we could refer back to in which the representation of a black historical character has not been represented the way in which many of us saw that character or believed that character, the role that character played in that historical scenario. But this one becomes really interesting, and I'll share. I thought most interesting was the piece that I read in Time Magazine that talked about why it was so important to get LBJ's character right in this film. And from his perspective, I think it was David Kaiser,
he says
he makes the point that it's so important for that to have happened now more than ever because of the spot that we're in terms of race relations in this country, and that it's important for us to have all of the information so we can move forth and make different decisions than what we've made previously. And again, I keep echoing the same point over and over again, that it's interesting to me that it always seems to reside on black bodies to be responsible for doing that.
Exactly. Exactly. No one batted an eye that Frederick Douglass was cut out of Lincoln.
Right.
Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. No one batted an eye. I'm like, oh, so Frederick Douglass, you know, he was just, you know, washing dishes, you know. Where is that in this dialogue?
Yes.
But no
yes.
one, there was no flack for that.
No.
There was no flack for that.
It's acceptable because it's a black body that can be erased from history and how a story gets told, because without it means we can still tell the story and we still see ourselves very much as heroes. But in this case, you have a black woman who makes the decision of who she's going to revere and who will be the voices of reason, who will be the voices to carry this movement forward, and who will be the villains. And in doing so, that means someone that doesn't look like me happens to be the villain, and that becomes a problem. And for me, that seems more troubling, that we don't see the hypocrisy in the situation when it's the reverse than when we're talking about this particular scenario.
And I also think that this criticism of LBJ being set up as the victim, the villain in this story, is false. It sets him up as a politician. It doesn't give him special praises. It doesn't put him on a special pedestal. It just shows that he's a politician who's making these decisions from a political standpoint. Yes, delay this process. Because, I mean, that's what people do in politics.
Right.
It doesn't make him a villain. And then also, the performances are so nuanced. And people, out of this critique, people are not paying attention to the performances that are extremely nuanced.
Yeah.
If he had been playing it like, I'm just a big racist and I don't want black people to have the vote, that's a different story. That is not the performance that Tom Wilkerson even gave in that piece.
Right. That's right.
So I think people are really there's a problem with that particular critique because they're missing the work that the actors did, and they're also missing the fact that it's being placed in a historical political context of how politics works.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that cinematically, I'm gonna open the phones here then, Robert, the first caller up at 410-319-8888. I thought a lot about this. Before I saw the film, since I knew the history, I knew that Johnson didn't oppose the Selma March. The exact opposite actually happened. He supported the Selma March and wanted that to happen because it would help him politically make the vote happen. And that she chose not to do that in the film. That's her choice. I actually didn't quite agree with that choice, but that was the choice she made. The other part of that, though, was Johnson was also a racist. There are all these kind of quotes from all these people who knew him where he used the N-word all the time. And whatever whoever he was with, he would use it in their vernacular, in their way of dropping that word out, mm-hmm. whether you're from Alabama or Texas or Georgia, or if he was talking to somebody black who was his servant, mm-hmm. he would drop the word. So, like his chauffeur, mm-hmm. who wrote a book about being a chauffeur at the White House, and he talked about this thing that Johnson would do. So it was there. There was a real reality to that. I get kind of old-fashioned my own self, maybe too narrow. I like history, so I love seeing the drama of real history rather than history being fictionalized. But that's fine.
Right.
Having said
and
that,
I agree.
Same thing with the Theory of Everything. The whole Hawking thing was turned around to make it a different kind of emotional film that really happened with him. Mm-hmm. But nobody kind of complained or said anything about that, or any of the other
stuff. Where were the complaints about all the white people in Exodus?
Mm-hmm.
Where was that?
There were some complaints, but they were coming from Black Twitter.
But that's my point.
That's where it was coming
David
from.
Kaiser didn't write that piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we want to talk about history, then let's talk about history.
Let's talk about that. We barely have a mention of slavery in Ken Burns' whole entire documentary about the Civil War. Come on. And that's a documentary.
No, the whole Exodus thing. I mean, I'm glad that was not nominated.
No.
I mean, it was, but what's from Wayne Block and the filmmaker's name? Exodus?
Ridley Scott.
Thank you. The great Ridley Scott is an incredible
film. Oh, absolutely.
I just taught my students Thelma and Louise this week. Come on.
One of the great movies of all time, I think, Thelma and Louise.
Exactly.
I love Thelma and Louise. But he actually said that, he started saying, I couldn't find any black actors to play these roles. And then B, he said, it wouldn't sell. You know, Ridley Scott, with all his power, couldn't sell a film because there was a darker-skinned Moses? I mean, then I'd be a black Moses. It could be a Palestinian Moses, an Arab Moses, something. Right?
It could have been a really well-tanned Moses. Who knows, right?
So,
but in his defense, what I appreciated about that response was he was saying what he felt like was very much a part of his world in Hollywood.
Right.
That there are certain projects that are green-lighted and there are certain projects that are not. And his belief was in casting several of these roles with people that were non-white may not have gone over so well and may not have reflected what he saw coming out to view the film. So I think there is a reality to what he said, which I actually appreciate. And just to go back to last week's talk about Annie, I'd appreciate it if Target had said that. At least I then would have understood the perspective,
right,
the corporate perspective that you are offering to say, this is capitalism, this is what I have to do. Instead of suggesting to me that I'm too naive to recognize that you're making these decisions for very political reasons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is often a debate. That isn't often a subject matter that isn't taken into consideration. The economics of this entire industry. Hollywood is an industry. It's about money. It's about making money. It's about they're going to invest in the things that sell. They're not going to invest in accuracy. So that's just generally not how it works.
Well, I do want to. That's why I do want to get into DuVernay and the organization she founded to address just that issue, as well as her. The difference that in Selma, given that it was directed by a woman. Mm-hmm. And the choices made by a woman, as she did in her other film, that I kind of want to kind of explore a bit. But let me go to the phones first. 410-319-8888. What have you seen this year? What have you liked? What do you think should be nominated? Who do you think is best actor and everything else that is being awarded? And if you see some or any of the films we're talking about, please join us at 410-319-8888. Robert Burt, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hello.
Hey, Robert.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, because I just saw Selma this past Sunday.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you, I mean, there are some issues I have with the film, but I will tell you what I do like, and you've already talked about it, certain ladies have talked about it, and that is, it sort of tells the story about a piece of the history of the Black Freedom Movement from the standpoint of the Black people who made the Freedom Movement. And it does so in an interesting kind of way. You see people who are in conflict with Dr. King. You know, from SNCC and all these people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which also is important because there's a kind of idealized narrative, which sort of like, you know, Dr. King sort of came as almost like Moses, and he led the people to the promised land, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the movement itself is actually quite variegated, sometimes contentious, and people had to work out their internal contradictions. Now, the interesting thing is that the film did not try to deny the, how shall I say, the role of whites there. I mean, there was Reverend Reeb who was there, and he was unfortunate. Some people may know was killed.
Right.
He was beaten to death by some bigots, and that's actually depicted. Viola Liozzo is sort of mentioned there. But, of course, in that film, it's said at the end, you don't see the depiction of her being murdered by the Klan on her way out of Selma.
Right.
And of course, when he calls, when King calls for, you know, the nation to mobilize to support Selma, a good number of, I guess, good old liberal and progressive white folk show up, including some rabbis. One, if I remember, who looked a little like Abraham Heschel.
Well, Heschel was there, right, 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 right.
Yeah, no.
Well, actually, that wasn't a rabbi. We talked about that. That the person pictured in the beard was the Greek Orthodox bishop.
Oh.
It was not Rabbi Heschel.
Oh, why did I think he was a rabbi?
Because he had a beard.
My misperception. My misperception of things. Yeah, that's interesting. And so they're there and they're not denied, but it's still talked about. You see whites come there, but they come there as allies of a movement which black people are making.
Right.
And it's a moral solidarity with that. And they don't upstage the people who actually launched the movement. And what about LBJ, since you mentioned that?
May I take a break in just a minute here, Robert? Finish up what you're thinking. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I would say this. You know, I've heard some people who were in the LBJ administration, and some who were with the movement. I've mentioned a film called Citizen King, whose attitude, it seems to suggest Johnson's attitude, at least in the beginning, was that, well, you know, we just got the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Maybe we ought to cool off for a
right.
minute, you know, and so forth and so on. I don't know about the as much antagonism as it was shown in the film, but there was some opposition, more like political feet-dragging.
Right.
As it was with Kennedy.
Right.
You know. So there was a problem there. And, you know, the idealized picture of Johnson, of course, is discredited. They may have gone a little overboard in terms of how much opposed he was.
All right. Well, we have to take a break here. And we're appreciating it. Looking forward to having you on the air with us this coming Monday. We'll be right back. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Did you see Selma? Did you see any of the films that are up and out? Maybe the ones that weren't even nominated. The new Chris Rock film, which I thought was very funny, that some people panned as not funny at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was extremely funny. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Please join us. Oh, before you join us, I have to tell you something. On our way to break, we're hearing The Ventures performing Wipeout, one of the great songs of that period. Bob Bogle of The Ventures, born on this day in 1937. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and that's Sade, of course. No Ordinary Love. She was born on this day in 1959. Happy birthday, Sade. We are back here with Dr. Kimberly Moffitt and Kalima Young as we talk about the Oscars and the Golden Globes, the films you've seen, focusing a lot on Selma because I think that's part of the topic of conversation at the moment, why it was not nominated. If we give more nominations in the in the Oscar scene and how that film was made, and I think there are a lot of things about this film that we've been getting into. Have you seen it? Please call us, 410-319-8888. Maybe it's the other films that you've seen. Birdman, which I think is nominated, and I think that's one of the films that should have been nominated. We talked about Boyhood. Grand Budapest Hotel is one of those films I thought was funny. I'm not so sure why it was up there with the rest of these films, but it was there. Three of Everything, which I did see, I thought was incredibly acted and made film, and the Brits just know how to do it, and I just love to watch them make movies. And, you know, so join us, 410-319-8888. I was thinking when Robert called in, a bunch of things. I do want to talk about the director here, but And this is one of them. If Reverend, I didn't come up with this. I had to give all due to Valerie, my wife, who said this. I didn't say it. But as we were leaving the movie, she said that if somebody white had made the film, then Reed of Yolo Yuzo would have been at the forefront of the movie,
mm-hmm.
as opposed mm-hmm. to King.
I had the same conversation with Francine this morning. I was, work. I was just like, what they wanted is they wanted Reverend Reed. They want the story of Reverend Reed seeing black people get killed on Bloody Sunday and saying, you know, getting hurt on Bloody Sunday and saying, you know what, I need to
do something.
Right. And then he goes and he gets martyred. They're like, oh, thank you, white people. You died for us. That would have gotten so many Oscar nods, everyone would be dying.
but the other part was, I think that I'm sorry. Do you want to say something, Kevin?
No, I was just going to echo. But that's what's problematic with this mm-hmm. is that there has to be a different story. There has to be a different narrative,
right?
And we can't keep telling the same narrative that shows only a white savior, because in fact, there's so many of us at the table trying to do mm-hmm. good for humankind that it may not look like the same person all the time. And
right.
what's wrong with telling those types of stories?
I really appreciated seeing, just like the caller. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Robert.
Just like Robert mentioned, I really appreciated seeing the coalition building and seeing the controversies and the problems that happen and the
yeah.
moments and the contentious
right.
moments.
Because those are real.
Because those things are real.
Right.
Movements do not happen with hunky-dory, happy, everyone
right.
gets along.
That's
Folks
right.
are going to have different disagreements on tactics. Folks are going to have disagreements on when you should do things, how you should do things, yeah. who should be at the forefront. This is how activism works. This is how movement building works. And the fact that it showed people, black people, doing the hardcore movement building and the nuance and dealing with the fact that no one is perfect and no one has a perfect strategy. I thought that was extremely important. Seeing that her hinting conversation about Martin Luther King's approach versus Malcolm X's approach. That whole scene was extremely powerful and very subtle. All of these things that we hear about, but it's never made a part of the larger narrative of
right.
the civil rights struggle. You saw glimpses of it. And I think that's
more important
than seeing if LBJ ate fried chicken with black people all day. Like,
I also like the way she addressed the issue of MLK and affairs.
Oh, yeah.
It was done in a very different way. And I think in many ways, depending on the couple, in a very real way, and then when you know what she said to him, and then that one line that was in that play, when she asked King, Coretta Scott King asked him, "Did you love them too?"
Mm.
And that the way she stood on his face mm-hmm. with the camera, and just mm. and you could watch. He's such a great actor. He's a wonderful actor, and just watch the contortions and his. You could see going on inside of him. Before he said the word no, it was just
mm-hmm.
there was a very powerful moments. I think some ways are better seen by women than men.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
I agree.
I think in the fact that she allowed time for there to be these emotional impacts and these emotional moments for people to work through these emotions and focus on that, not the actions going around, but focus on that. That's a very woman's
Absolutely.
Female perspective as a director. That's a very feminist film approach.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Of letting things unfold and letting emotion be in the room without it
really
afterwards
point.
Having to be a slapping and screaming and fighting. I'm like, no, actually, this is how people process
yeah.
things.
Let it sink in.
Let it sink yeah. in. And I felt like that was a very indicative of her direction as a female director.
I mean, even
her choices.
Even how she chose to portray the Birmingham bombing.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
Which was very powerful. You know, I could see that many male directors would have made this been about the explosion and
oh,
body
yeah.
parts and right.
Ridley Scott
yes.
would have had it would have exploded
and blood everywhere,
blood everywhere,
but hers was so beautiful and subtle and just so painful just to know what just happened and watch that surreal scene that she created in the film. I just.
And anyone who knows history could tell at the beginning of the film that that's what was about to happen.
Mm.
You know, the minute you see the little boy walk away
mm.
and it's just those four little girls on the steps talking
yeah.
about Coretta Scott's hair.
Okay, right.
You know, like the things that little girls talk about when we're just being little girls in our little girl world. And you just knew it was going to happen. It was beautifully, emotionally done. It wasn't about the gore.
So what did y'all see? Nobody went to movies this year? Maybe you didn't. Maybe a lot of people just watching what happens on Comcast and you can get on demand. But join us.
Netflix is pretty awesome.
Netflix is great. Netflix is really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to use Netflix to see her other film, which I have not seen, to check that out.
Uh-huh.
410-319-8888. What are your thoughts? What have you seen? What do you think about the nominations? Did these films say anything to you at all? 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us for that conversation. A lot of people are saying that, you know, because of this, and I'm going to move on to something else with some other films, is that because of her lack of nomination that Hollywood plays these games, that she'll have a hard time doing another film.
Possible.
That's definitely possible.
You know, who comes to mind is, and he's not going to have problems doing films, but one of his projects, I'm thinking of George Lucas and Red Tails, and how he was not able to get a major studio to back that film, and he ended up using his own money to make it happen.
Right.
And so, again, it comes down to what narratives and stories do we want folks to have access to and know, and that was about his personal commitment to want that story to be told about those airmen, the Tuskegee Airmen. But in many ways, he knew after trying to get this project supported that clearly it wasn't one of the stories that a studio believed in and wanted told.
And I think also you have to think about even people, not necessarily the directors, but the actors. Black actors after they become Academy Award-winning actors. So what's Cuba Gooding Jr. doing? I saw him in Selma. You know, think about that. Let's think about Halle Berry. Let's think about John Singleton's films. Let's think about even when you get the big, giant, happy, shiny Oscar, it doesn't necessarily propel them forward into other projects.
And that's one of the points that Chris Rock raised in his essay where he's criticizing Hollywood. He makes the point of when it comes down to short list of leading ladies, there's never a black woman's name on that list.
Right.
It's only if someone in the studio says, oh, we should probably tap Halle Berry for that. Or what about Viola Davis for that role?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about them being at the forefront of someone's mind and wanting them to be at the table from the very beginning.
So we're at an interesting cusp, I think, in a kind of creative history of the United States. That's the other thing that Chris Rock wrote about in his essays, in that essay, the one you're talking about, which I thought was really well done.
Mm-hmm. It really was.
And I was thinking about this as you were speaking because I was just on a site the other day looking at the 10 best Native American films of the year that nobody saw. It didn't go anywhere other than in small theaters and film festivals. And people saw them in movie theaters on the res. Other than that, they didn't go anyplace. But the fact that all these were made, the fact that, as Chris Rock talked about, there are so many black folks now in film, making movies, leading actors, that visually out there for the world to see. But at the same time, we're in a world where the money and the power is still controlled by the same hands that always controlled it, which limit the availability and the distribution, which is something that DuVernay worked on as well, but the distribution of these films. We're in an interesting place with this right now.
Oh, yeah. And people don't pay attention to the fact that from 1912, from the first time our first movie was made by black folks, movies are – there's this history of – black filmmakers only being given a large area to do their work when there's an economic crisis happening. When Hollywood is not making money traditionally, then it will invest in the voices of marginalized groups. So you think about 1991 when 21 African-American pictures were made and 12 were from major studios, like back in the 90s when there was the golden age of black new cinema.
Mm-hmm.
These things happen whenever Hollywood is losing money. When Hollywood loses money and they're like, oh, well, we've got this extra surplus, then it's just like, all right, black people, go make movies. Yay. And we're going to celebrate those.
That's true.
But the minute the recession was over, the minute 2008, everybody's starting to feel better and Hollywood is bouncing back and 3D is making money. Now they're just like, oh, we can. OK, well, we'll majorly distribute too. So it really depends on the economic space of Hollywood at that moment when they allow more voices of African-Americans at the table.
So true. It's so true. I mean, we saw it, what, late 60s, early 70s?
Exactly.
It popped up again, early 90s.
We have our renaissance is whenever Hollywood is losing its money, and then they're like, all right, we're going to let a spate of black folks make some films. Yeah.
Let's show the creativity. Let's get the audiences to support it.
Mm-hmm.
But then it disappears.
And then it goes away.
Yeah.
Stephanie just chatted in here that the Grand Budapest Hotel is a great movie. It was really well done and one of the best Wes Anderson films in a while. So
the colors are pretty.
You didn't like the film?
I didn't see the film. I just like the colors.
Is that the colors?
Yeah.
It was an interesting film. But you mentioned Netflix earlier. So what's on Netflix and streaming on demand you guys are watching?
Other than repeats of the shows that I love, like Doctor Who and The X-Files. I really have gotten into Black Mirror, which is a BBC show that is, it's like the Twilight Zone. So none of the episodes are linked together. They're like standalones, but it's all about our relationships with technology. So it really makes an interesting conversation about what we do with technology and how technology becomes sort of this sort of imposing evil force on people.
You said that's BBC?
Yeah, it's a BBC show called Black Mirror.
And Mark Henry just wrote Black Mirror exclamation point. He must like it as well.
Yeah. So I've been really getting into that show an awful lot. What about you, Doctor?
I have been writing, so I haven't watched much of anything except some of the films that we've been talking about today. I can share very quickly, and it's a quick tangent, that I've been focusing a lot of attention on the recent boycott of the VH1 television series reality show Sorority Sisters.
Yeah.
And the push that a number of black women, in particular those of black Greek letter organizations, decided to take a stand against. And as a member of one of those organizations, I have a bit of a different interpretation of what I saw happen with that particular show and with that boycott.
It.
Absolutely not.
Oh.
No, I'm actually calling out sororities for why they took a stand on this show and didn't on several others that were worthy of being boycotted. And
I got to see it now. Is that bad? I have not seen it.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of TV, so I miss a lot that way. I used to do TV shows all the time here in the program, but I never watched.
Yeah.
Well, some of that's a good thing, especially since the genre of reality TV has taken over.
Yeah.
I'm curious what when you talk about these films, and I'm just thinking about two things here. One was the distribution aspect, and Ava DeMarais started this organization that I only learned about as I was kind of researching the show, which was a show called African American Film Festival Releasing Movement, which is a distribution collective of black arts organizations to put films out there.
Awesome.
I mean, she's like a very, she sounds like a fascinating human being, just what she has put out there in terms of what she's saying about this film, the way she looks at film, and just that she's in the middle of trying to do things to change who gets distributed and who gets to see what.
Right. And she's actively working on a systems-based approach, which people do attempt in Hollywood. When you get a little bit of gravitas, you know, you'd have that moment, okay, I'm going to try to harness that. And you see it propel into things. Like you watched it in the 1990s when Eddie Murphy propelled himself and propelled his stardom to like, I'm going to give all of these other people a shot on my show.
Right.
And I'm going to produce some black films. And so people try it. When the special light of Hollywood is giving you the glow, oftentimes black folks take that and they use it to address these systemic things in the small times that they can, because they know that that light is going to quickly get diminished. And maybe just call me a pessimist about all of this, but that's just...
Well, history has reflected your pessimism, so
right.
It's not that it's coming out of nowhere. I recall a HBO film several years ago that tried to tackle this point, and it was done by, what's her name? Gina Bythewood.
Mm-hmm.
Her and her husband did this film called Dancing in September. Do you remember this film?
Yeah.
Where it was essentially this black woman finally kind of gets her break and is able to produce a television show. And she has all of these kind of idealistic ways of, that she's going to represent black people. And the show isn't doing well because she's doing that. Mm-hmm. But the moment the main character becomes like a modern day J.J. Evans from Good Times, where he's got
J.J.,
this...
J.J., I thought that well.
Where he's got this line that he says at in every show, all of a sudden the show starts to become popular. Mm-hmm. And as the show becomes popular, he becomes more of a mockery with this way in which he behaves and carries himself. And it ends up showing us how even those of us with the best intentions of wanting to change this system, in fact, find themselves caught up in the system mm-hmm. and unable to make a change because it's all about capitalism.
Right. The system contorts. It forces people to contort themselves so much to make it work. It's very political. You know, you watch politicians go into office being very idealistic, and then the system itself contorts them and makes them have to change and modify their vision and modify and modify. And I think the same thing happens in Hollywood as well. And those who don't contort end up being seen as the one that you can count on to say, well, F the Oscars, like
right.
a certain Spike Lee just did.
He did. Spike Lee's essay was really interesting. As
yeah.
he said that nobody
you
is watching.
You can't say what he said.
I can't say what he said. I can allude to what he said. He said that nobody is watching Marilyn Farmer Miss Daisy.
Miss Daisy.
I can say Marilyn Farmer.
Marilyn Farmer. Yes.
But,
that's good. That's
you know,
good.
But and he said, but they are watching. But in schools across the world, they are looking at Do the Right Thing, and they will look at Selma like they looked at The Wire. There are certain things they got no recognition. Like The Wire never won anything.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Anything,
but everyone's trying to copy it.
But everyone's trying to copy
nothing.
It. Many of us spend
nary an Emmy, nary a Golden Globe. It's amazing.
Well, yeah. But think about how many of us spent our Christmas holidays rewatching it because HBO replayed it mm-hmm. from start to finish.
You know, and I, you know, there's a lot of controversy still over The Wire from people in Baltimore who think it only showed one portion of the right. of the community. And there's some validity to that, but when I know a lot of the actors in that, and when you hear the dialogue among black actors about that film, mm-hmm. And the fact that the depth of the roles people were allowed to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the depth of the acting and being mm-hmm. able to open yourself up as an actor. And the fact that that particular production gave jobs to more black actors than any single production in the history of the United States, film or television.
Mm. Wow.
Though I do remember the story when Charles Dutton came in to direct The Corner,
mm-hmm.
Who is an old friend, and I taught him theater in prison many, 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 many years ago. that he stopped the production of The Corner because there were hardly any black folks on the crew.
Mm.
You know, they do all the work, the electricians, everybody else.
Right, right.
So Rock said that until half the crew is black, we're not moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a part of trying to change
and he made that
system.
Change.
Right.
And so he changed that system.
Yeah.
And
right.
then half of all the people working behind the scenes were hired were African American. I mean, so that was, you know, I remember very well when that happened. That whole kind of scene when he kind of said, that's it. I'm not doing
it. You have to harness when you're in the spotlight, especially, and it's just what happens when you're giving that moment, that entry. People often try to harness that spotlight to make some systemic changes.
And here's where, let me go to the phones right here, but here's where to me, it's the part of race in America that people who really oppose racism and don't like it and think it needs to change in our culture, in our society, don't sometimes see what's right in front of them. Mm-hmm. The fact that the entire crew is white mm-hmm. is just the way it always has been.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That film crews working on TV and advertising are mostly white, and so you just hire the people you've known for the last 20, 30 years and you've worked with forever and their friends and their sons and daughters.
Or you do like Chris Rock said in his piece where
right.
you
mm-hmm.
choose
Take
the
it.
Black
right.
person that's from the Ivy League school
right.
that doesn't have access to masses of black individuals. So they are already in this very privileged environment
mm-hmm.
that really means they probably aren't the best person
right.
to give that insight that we're looking for to have the voice of the diverse black community to be heard. And so even though they might be sitting at that table in that boardroom helping to make the decisions based on their perspective, their reality, their story, they may not be able to actually tell a story that benefits a larger population of people.
Right.
Let me open the phones here. 410-319-8888. Glad you're joining us here. And tell us about the films you've been seeing and thinking about. 410-319-8888. Arami, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi. Thanks for... Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I watched the movie. I think it was well made. I want to congratulate everybody. We need more black people to do these kind of movies and tell our story. So we shouldn't worry about the Oscars or how they will reward us. We should worry about how we will tell our own story from our own perspective instead of going portraying the, you know, the white people as good people and the black people as bad people. And also, whoever made the film and people who can, they need to put it out there in schools, community resources, so people can learn and know their stories and also be motivated to organize in case of political issues. That's my and I think my call.
All right, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
100% agree. Mark, I do want to piggyback on a statement you made when you were talking about sort of the whiteness of the crew or not seeing the things around you. I think also people who are uncomfortable watching Selma, white folks who are feeling uncomfortable watching Selma and having problems with LBJ or they just don't know, need to sit down and sort of interrogate, before criticizing, interrogate exactly why it's making them uncomfortable. Because I think it makes people really uncomfortable to have a group that they oppress actually telling their own story. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that space, often it's really hard to recognize that that's what's going on and that's where the critique is coming from.
Even from the most liberal.
Even from the most liberal ones. They're like, what? What? This is so shocking in this feminist black female perspective of telling this story that people don't know what to do and they don't even have the opportunity. They don't even take the time to sort of interrogate why they feel uncomfortable as a spectator. So then they cleave on to like LBJ was seen as a villain as opposed to cleaving on to like what maybe might be what's going on is you didn't get the explosion you wanted that you're used to seeing. You had emotional impact and people actually doing performances that were nuanced. And you also have people coming from black people talking about their own experience in their own voice. And that makes people feel uncomfortable.
Especially because there was no white savior.
And especially because it wasn't about Reverend, you know.
Rita Villalobos,
who was brilliant and sweet and peace, bro.
And who were people who sacrificed their lives for the struggle. Both of them.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I think and that was in the film and it was in its place in that film because the film was about something very different, as you were just describing. Yeah. You know, and I think to me it was one of the I fully expecting not to really be into the film when I saw it because most of the films I've seen that have to do with the civil rights movement I've not been blown away by.
Right.
But I was really moved by this one. You know, I remember when I watched Mississippi Burning.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Remember that film?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to see that actually in junior high. They made us watch it on Black History Month.
I mean, as we left that film, my reaction was back in the day, if that FBI had been like that, we would have won a long time earlier than we did.
Boom.
But again,
I'm giving you mental depth.
But again, look at the takeaway, right? Of who became the focal point,
right?
Of that film, even something that was supposed to be in the heart of, in the midst of civil rights movement, but who comes out on top and who becomes the reason why the FBI does everything that it does? Mm-hmm. It wasn't for all these brown faces that it endured oppression,
right?
For decades, it was two individuals that they felt were worthy of being recognized vindicated.
No, right, exactly. So I'm curious what's going to happen in these Oscars. I probably won't watch the whole thing. I watched more of the Golden Globes than I thought I would. But I'm really interested to see after it happens what happens. Because, I mean, when you look at this list, I'm just really blown away that also that nobody, not even the lead actor in Selma was nominated. Nobody. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. I forget the woman's name who played Coretta Scott King, but she was brilliant. I mean, Oprah in that small role as somebody at the window, who wanted to register to vote. Right. The nuance, she actually, as much as she can get on my nerves sometimes in the air, she is such a nuanced actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it was the role in The Butler, is that the movie, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. she played the wife?
Mm-hmm.
Or in this piece where she had a very small role, it was just, they were so nuanced and you could just feel every movement she did. She was amazing in that little role.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, so I think it's amazing acting. So I've encouraged folks to see Summer, for sure. As there are other, a lot of great films which you didn't get to, but you did get to another film show we're going to do, whether it's Birdman or The Imitation Game, which I really want to see.
A top five
we didn't talk about, which I thought was a great film, and The Theory of Everything, which I thought was another incredibly well done. I just love the acting in that movie. Just blew me away. Incredible mm-hmm. actors. But this has always been great. This has been good to have the two of you here. It's always good to see both of you in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you, always.
Dr. Kimberly Moffitt, Associate Professor of Africana Studies at UMBC, co-editor of Blackberries and Red Bones, Critical Articulations of Black Hair, Black Body Politics in Africana Communities, and Kalima Young, Director of the Baltimore Art Plus Justice Project, project at the Office of Community Engagement at MICA, where she's also teaching a course.
Actually, I'm teaching at Towson.
Teaching at Towson.
Yes.
Very
Women
cool.
and Gender and Film. Sorry.
And when is that? Have you started yet?
Yeah, that's what I've been teaching this mini master and teaching in the spring.
Very cool.
So, yeah, at MICA.
I might have to come in and just
see
what
you're
doing. Why don't you? Just sit in the back row and watch. I'm serious. I like that. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Before we take a break, I want to remind you a very important thing here, that The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. And on our way to break here, Are You That Somebody? By Aaliyah, born on this day in 1979. We'll be right back.
Like the hawk in the sky, that fly, for you are my prey. Boy, I promise you, if we keep open heads and know.